You're listening to the Social Work Me podcast with your hosts, Matt Barnes and Julie Carter.
Oh my God. Welcome to episode 10 of the Social Work Me podcast with your host, Matt Barnes. And I'm really excited to bring you another amazing guest this week. And this time, I didn't have to go far to interview Lauren Marcos. And Lauren is currently completing her MSW placement with us here at Southwest Counseling. And she's really becoming a strong proponent and cheerleader for using solution-focused therapy in general, but also using it during COVID-19. I really wanted to bring her on the show to talk more about solution-focused therapy, as well as what it's been like completing a master's program in the midst of a pandemic, and just some of the things that have gone into, you know, being a student right now. And so Lauren is currently completing her Master of Social Work degree at the University of Buffalo. She has over 10 years experience in the social work field. She's worked with children, youth, families in the child welfare system, as well as the criminal justice sector. And she's also specialized working with Indigenous populations. And so we're going to talk a lot about solution-focused therapy. On kind of a side note, next week I'm going to be releasing some really helpful tips from an interview I did about adapting your business, marketing, and values to these pandemic times. And so if you're an entrepreneur, a business owner, or in private practice, check out our Instagram page. I'm going to be dropping some videos, just some short, you know, 2 to 3 minute videos from an interview I did with Sarah Williams, and that should be coming next week. And then before we get into the interview, just a quick note from our sponsor, Owl Practice. How many no-shows have you faced in the last month? With Owl Practice's automated email and text message reminders, you can save yourself time while also reducing your no-show count. You can customize your messages, set each client up to receive the reminders that they prefer. It's impossible to chase down clients for every appointment, so why not let Owl do the work for you? All Social Work Me listeners will get their first month free with Owl using the promo code SocialWorkMe. So head over to owlpractice.ca/socialworkme.php for more details. Let's get into the interview with my guest, Lauren Marcos.
This podcast is brought to you by Southwest Counseling Services and Julie Carter Counseling Services.
How does that make you feel?
Don't social work me.
Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to me.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
One of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is because you're probably one of the only social workers that I know that is so passionate about solution-focused therapy. And your passion for it has kind of rubbed off on me. And I'm sure it will on others too once we start talking about it. So that's going to be kind of the focus of the show. But let's talk a little bit about what does life look like right now with COVID-19 going on, and what are you doing right now?
Life looks completely different than it did before COVID-19 in many ways. I think that's probably the standard answer that you get right now. You know, it's interesting that the only experience I had prior to this was face-to-face, and that just is not possible right now. So I've had to go very quickly from being able to work with clients face-to-face to being able to work with them using, you know, technology to assist. So it's been a really big change that way. And then personally as well, having kids at home, trying to carve out space to be able to meet with clients in a private way where I can concentrate on what I need to concentrate on. So, you know, the personal and the professional lives have been colliding a little bit more than usual.
Yeah. It's an adjustment. How do you find adjusting to doing video and phone sessions?
You know, at first it was quite frankly a little bit terrifying for me. I like to practice in areas that feel comfortable for me and slowly push myself into new growth. That system did not work in this situation. So I've had to develop a new competency really quickly. And so on a broader level, it's forced me to develop coping skills for practicing in ways that feel very uncomfortable. But I've survived, and I've just tried to be open to the learning experience. You know, I've lost a lot in terms of learning opportunities as an MSW student going through COVID. But there are a lot of doors that have opened for me for learning that I don't think I would have gone knocking on had this situation not occurred. I never in a million years would have chosen to do telemental health. Ever. But, you know, now I'm finding some benefit to it. So I'm trying to really embrace those opportunities you know, do the best with what I can.
Yeah.
With what I have.
That's a great way to put it, and adapting as you go. And let's talk a little bit about, I mean, going back to school as a mature student is one thing. And then going through your placement through COVID is a whole nother ball game. Let's go back in time and kind of fill us in on how did you get to this point? Tell us a little bit about your path in social work.
Well, I graduated from Queen's with an honors Bachelor of Arts in Sociology. And after I graduated, I quickly decided I wanted to work in the social work field. And my career path has been this kind of winding, curvy journey through the nonprofit world into child protection and back into nonprofit. And about 5 years ago, I began to recognize this common theme in all of that diverse experience. And that was just the ubiquitous nature of trauma. No matter who I was working with, it just all seemed to come back to trauma. So I became very interested in addressing it with clients, and I took a certificate course at U of T, and that was a turning point for me. That helped me to realize that helping clients overcome challenges associated with trauma is what I want to do with the rest of my career. So I applied for my MSW, and here I am, you know, months away from finishing my last internship and from graduating. So I'm super excited to see where this path takes me, you know, now that I get to kind of, I've achieved what I want to be when I grow up, I think.
That's awesome. Well, let's, I mean, you're doing therapy now, we're in this pandemic, and you and I have had a lot of conversations about what type of work we can be doing with clients. And we keep circling back to brief solution focused therapy. Mm-hmm. Let's jump into it. Why are you so passionate about it?
It feels right with my soul. That sounds a bit corny, but it just feels like it fits for me. It's when I'm sitting in a room with a client and I can see that process of transformation happening on a small incremental level. It's so exciting for me. Watching the expression on their face when they realize that we get to sit there and talk about things that make them feel good for however long we're together. There's defenses just drop. And, you know, it's such a privilege to be able to share the experience of somebody coming to recognize the competency they already have. That they don't need anything from me besides the space to be able to explore the solutions that they already have and how they can take those solutions and apply them to their life. And what better context than COVID to use an approach that is all about hope and empowerment, not only for our clients, but for us as practitioners as well.
Nice. That sounds really good. And can you kind of give us a run through of solution focused therapy and maybe a bit of the background of it?
Yeah, not a total subject matter expert, but I can give you a brief sketch. It's a way of working with clients that just embodies a deep respect for their existing strengths, their competencies, and using those things as a building block for change. And it's really grounded in the idea of reality being a matter of perception. So if you go back to some symbolic interactionism and some social constructivism, it's not that there is this one objective reality, but rather our reality is what we embody it, you know, our embodied reality from our perspective. So solution focused works on, you know, using the principle of co-constructing a new reality where clients feel empowered and they feel competent. So from the perspective of solution-focused practice, it's not necessary to dissect or even really fully understand the nature of client problems. That can kind of bring us into the weeds. What's more important is to really understand clients' frames of reference and what they see as possibilities in their own life. So we put them in the driver's seat as the experts. And we become, instead of, you know, the source of new knowledge that will transform them, we become simply a collaborative partner in co-constructing this new reality where the client realizes the competency that they have and they feel empowered to put those competencies into practice.
Cool. So co-constructing, you're saying, is like the therapist is sort of paraphrasing, or what does the therapist role really look like?
Well, so in solution focus work, the intervention is the conversation. So there are particular techniques such as, you know, asking coping questions, scaling questions, the miracle questions. Really what the solution focus model looks like is a set of scaffolded questions that the therapist asks to create that space for clients to explore what the problem means for them, what effect it has on them, and then what solutions they already have that can be the building blocks of a bridge to overcome whatever problem they've come to us with. So really, it's about asking the right question. Insoo Kimberg is one of the founders of the model. And she says, you know, good questions get good answers. Bad questions get bad answers. So our job as a solution-focused therapist is to be really present, to take a not knowing stance, and to ask good questions.
Can you give some examples of good questions to ask?
So I love coping questions. I think they're a really powerful tool for reinforcing a sense of competence and turning a conversation towards empowerment, even in the most bleak situation. So you might have a client who is just struggling with problem-saturated talk, you know, and is feeling really defeated. And, you know, the response can be, I'm really amazed with all you have going on right now. You still managed to get up and come to this appointment today. How do you think you did that? And it seems so simple. And it can be a real struggle. These questions seem simple, but clients can struggle with them. And then it's a matter of saying, yeah, you're right. You know, I'm asking you some questions that are kind of weird and maybe they're difficult and you need to take a minute to think about it, but you know, just give it a shot for me. And you see the wheels start turning in front of you where they say, wow, you know, well, I just know that I need to, you know, make some responsibilities happen. Really? How do you know that? And it becomes a snowball effect of competence and empowerment and hope.
Cool. I love that. I love just how you, right away, I mean, you're hearing the problems, but you're not focusing on them and you're actually kind of reintegrating their orientation to strengths.
Absolutely. And it's all about operating in the client's frame of reference. So at the start of a meeting, at the start of a relationship, just getting details completely from a non-judgmental place. You know, what does that problem mean for you? What is important to you? Who is important to you? I mean, we walk into the room with a lot of preconceived notions about what is good for our clients, right? It's just the nature of who we are. But what is most important, my belief of what is most important for helping clients is what they want for their lives, what they think is the best solution for them. Because if it doesn't fit for them, they're not going to try it out.
Mm-hmm. Good point. And you talked about a miracle question. What is that?
So the miracle question is one of the main tools that we use to help develop very clear goals with clients. And it helps them to move from problem focus to future focus. And in a way that opens up a space for them to imagine endless possibilities, which again helps steer them towards hope, them and the conversation. So the question is supposed to be posed in a very, you know, odd way to kind of throw clients off and change the tone. Something like, you know, this is a really big problem for you. Let's just take a break here. And if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you a very odd question. Please, you know, bear with me. You know, say you leave your appointment today and you go home tonight and you go to sleep and, you know, something weird happens. Maybe like a miracle occurs. But you're asleep, so you don't know this miracle has happened. It still happens. And your problem is solved. You wake up in the morning, you open your eyes, your problem isn't there, but you don't know that yet because the miracle happened while you were asleep. Let's walk through what's different about your day. What do you notice? What do people notice about you that tells you your problem is solved? And you go through a very slow process of obtaining, you know, minute detail about what is different about that person's life with the problem not being there anymore.
That's such a cool way of setting goals, you know, and it makes me think about kind of the standard way that we sit down with clients and it's like, well, what are we working on here? And, you know, a lot of the times clients are like, well, and I heard this yesterday from a client, you know, I take my car to the mechanic and he does what he needs to do. I go to the dentist and the dentist fixes whatever problems are in my mouth. So you tell me what we need to work on. So this is a cool way of coming through kind of a back door to find out what's the focus of our sessions going to be.
And some people have a real difficulty answering the miracle question. Okay. You'll get every response from, well, I don't believe in miracles, to I don't know. And the key is to really sit there with clients, because this answering this question isn't only about creating well-formed goals. It's about the mental process that clients go through as they begin to imagine new possibilities. It's that shift from problem focus to future possibility. And it is a mental process. It's not a, you know, something that happens in the blink of an eye. So this question helps create a space where clients can go through that.
And I guess it gives you a bit of insight to assess their ability to shift out of focusing on problems to looking at possible solutions or positive outcomes in their life.
Absolutely. And it gives you a lot of information about who and what is important in their life. You'll hear clients talk about, well, I'll know that a miracle has happened because my kids get up and they listen to me. Or I'll know that a miracle has happened because my husband will cook me breakfast for once. So you start to hear little nuggets of the things and the people who are going to be instrumental for change in that client's life, even if they're not able to articulate those things directly to you before you ask that question. Hmm.
So can you give an example? I mean, you just gave a couple good examples. My kids listen to me. My husband cooks me breakfast. What do you do with that information after the miracle question?
Well, it's all about getting details. And once you're able to get details that are expressed in positive terms, so a lot of people will say, well, I won't be this, I won't be that. So it's a matter of exploring, okay, so what is going to be happening instead? And then when you have this huge list of all the things that will be different after the miracle occurs, you start to look for exceptions that are already present in the client's life. So you can follow up with a question like, so are there any little bits of this miracle picture that are already in your life today? And 99% of the time, with a little bit of support, clients are going to say, yeah, you know, my husband made me breakfast last Saturday. Or when I got up yesterday, I didn't feel that weight on my chest. Or, you know, whatever it is. And it can be small. And all you need to find is one exception to their problem, and then you can amplify it. And you explore. You have found a partial solution to this problem already before you came to see me. How did you make that happen? And then it's a process of exploring the existing competency. And that then snowballs into empowerment.
That's really cool. And how do you find that working right now with COVID going on? I mean, I imagine some people might say to that miracle question, I'll wake up tomorrow and the pandemic will be over and everything will be back to normal. Sort of focusing on things out of their control, maybe.
Yeah, well, you know, and to be fair, in the context of COVID, from the solution-focused perspective, a client may not be ready to go into detailed goal formation. They might be in a place where you need to be doing some more crisis-style intervention. And in my work with clients in COVID, I always start with coping. So the session starts with, you know, what can we do that will be helpful for you today? So forget what I think is going to be helpful.
Yeah. That's
right. And then, you know, inevitably my sessions have been turning towards coping questions. How are you getting from one day to another? You're facing a lot of challenges, but you're here, you're out of bed, you showered. How did you do that? How did you know to do that? What difference has doing that made for you? And in that way, you can also explore exceptions and competency, but in a way that really respects where people are at in the moment. They may, you know, quickly turn to solution talk and demonstrating that they feel competent and empowered. And that in that case, then you move on to the miracle question.
Okay.
You know, right. But it's all about gauging, you know, people's responses to those questions.
So there's a lot of room, I guess, for the therapist to kind of explore and go down different avenues once you start getting the client it's mind geared towards how they're getting out of bed or how they're coping or what they need to do to change or to make changes. At some point, I guess, are you mapping out steps for them to take once you've established the miracle question?
Yeah. So that's usually the end of the first session, is gauging, ending with a scaling of a client's confidence and hopefulness for change. So, and that looks something like, you know, there's some hard work that we've discussed here for you to do. You know, how confident are you that you can, you know, bring about some of this change on a scale of, you know, 1 to 10. And then sometimes what you can do with those scaling questions is, if you say, right now, where are you on the scale? People say, yeah, I'm at a 4 or 5, right? What tells you that you're at a 4 or 5? How do you know that? And they might lapse into some problem talk. And in that case, you say, okay, so how do you know you're not 1 point lower? And then you'll get clients describing, well, you know, I have a lot of family support. I have a really good job. And they start mentioning a lot of their buffering, a lot of their informal supports, all their competency. And you say, wow, that sounds really awesome. What do you think it's going to take for you to move up just 1 point on the scale? What will you be doing differently when you're at a 6 instead of a 5? They start describing themselves. They start describing what they're doing. And then they describe the next small step.
Cool. That's awesome. I love it. It seems so simple the way you describe it.
Yeah, it's... What is hard about the model is sticking to the model.
Okay.
Because we are trained to focus on problems.
Mm-hmm.
We are trained to go to those feelings of hurt and really sit there. So it is asking the same coping question 8, 9, 10 times in a row, slightly different every time, until the client is able to answer. And it's not just peppering them with the question again and again and again. You're validating and all using those skills in between, but it's sticking to the model and not getting sucked into the problem talk can be difficult at times.
I bet. And especially when you're trained in other modalities that are more feeling focused.
But, you know, the beautiful thing about solution-focused work is you do not have to be 100% loyal only to the model to use a lot of the techniques. Scaling questions in particular can be adapted to any model and can be beneficial. Coping questions, you can take pieces of solution-focused work and you can make it your own. Whether or not you want to call yourself 100% a solution-focused practitioner. So that's what I like about the different techniques, that they have usefulness and utility even used outside the model itself.
Cool. Yeah. And that makes sense to be complementing other modalities with this. And it sounds like a great way of wrapping up sessions too.
It is. Without knowing it, I naturally have been wrapping up my sessions in a solution-focused way for a really long time. That there's something about sending a client out into the world with a feeling of hopefulness and empowerment so that they feel like they can go do the hard work that needs to be done.
Yeah, that empowerment keeps coming up with solution-focused, and it makes a lot of sense that they leave with a bit of a roadmap, some techniques or coping strategies to try, or just having some confidence that they're able to rely on their own skills and abilities rather than having to depend on a therapist.
Yeah, and you know, when solution focused was first developed, one of the key aspects of the model was sending a client away with homework, providing them with a summary of their strengths and giving them compliments and then giving them a homework assignment. Some newer forms of the model don't necessarily include that. I like to do it, but I frame it as an experiment. That way there isn't the negative connotation if you don't get your homework done or if you don't enjoy it. So I frame it as an experiment, but sometimes it's something as simple as, this week I'd like you to notice what's working. Because there's that adage, what you notice grows. And that's the crux of solution-focused work, that co-construction of a new reality. If you can shift perception and focus to what works, to solutions, to empowerment, to hope, most likely that's what's going to help that client grow.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And just for them to have some homework, there's that continuity between sessions. There's something for them to be focusing on. And again, you know, kind of like my client that I had yesterday saying, you know, I bring my car to the mechanic to fix and then I come and pick it up, right? It's giving them things to do outside of the 1 hour a week or 1 hour every other week or whatever it is.
Well, and it's refocusing the locus of control, mm-hmm. right? To internal versus external. If I'm waiting for somebody else to fix me, I'm never going to be fixed. Yeah. And I'm never going to feel like I can take steps to bring about change. A really cool question, solution-focused practice, it are called pre-session change questions. And so one of the basic understandings in solution-focused work is that change is inevitable and it is always happening, whether you have intervention or not. And that from big change is made up of small, tiny change. So the very first time I meet with a client, I ask them, so from the time that you made the appointment to come see me to today, what has gotten better about the problem? Has anything gotten better about the problem? And the majority of the time, people will say that something has gotten better, even if it's just something small. I've felt better about it because I had the appointment with you. Okay. So what difference did having the appointment with me make for you over the past 2 weeks? Well, I felt like I, you know, actually have started to tackle this issue. Okay. Tell me more about that. How is that helpful for you? Solution-focused practice is built on the process of listen, select, and build. So listen in the dialogue for something that is going to be useful in the model. Select that thing. Ask a question that's built on it. And then you're going to start building solutions. And it's, if a client's not bought in, then you're not going to be able to do this. This is a true co-construction of a new reality. It has to be built in the client's frame of reference. And echoing the client's words is huge in that. Them knowing that you understand and that you are accepting their reality, no matter what, no matter what you might think of it.
It's like you can't do this without first validating and empathizing with the problems.
Absolutely. Usually you're looking at approximately 5 to 10 minutes of problem talk at the beginning. And just because the model is not focused on problems doesn't mean that problems don't matter. It's very important to get an understanding of the problem the client feels that they have, why that thing is a problem for them, because we may assume it's a problem for one reason when really it's another, and the effect that that problem is having in their life in terms of, you know, just their own behavior, but also in relational terms. So problem exploration is important, but it's a very small part of the model compared to other modalities.
So I imagine if you have a client coming in with a new traumatic event that's maybe in a crisis, that there's some time before you're able to kind of get into solution-focused therapy.
What's actually really neat about solution-focused work is it does lend to work with people right after a traumatic event. If you think about the nature of trauma, it's all about perception. And usually our perception of a traumatic event naturally evolves after it's occurred. So solution-focused work can be really useful because of its strong belief in reality as a matter of perception. So as long as you are working with that very deep respect for the fact that somebody may not be able to go into goal formation, solution-focused work can be very useful in helping them to overcome their maybe sense of powerlessness or hopelessness that is associated with an event. And the model also lends itself to only looking at, you know, a next small step, which is appropriate in situations when you're looking at like post-traumatic stress.
So then that small step might just be some level of safety. If there was abuse in the home or domestic violence, like getting the locks changed or going to a women's interval home or something.
It can be really small. There's one awesome tape I listened to with Insoo Kim working with a perpetrator of violence. And the next small step that he identifies in the tape is rolling over in the morning and giving his wife a hug and smiling at her. And he left that session, and after that session, from follow-up 18 months later, there was not a new occurrence of violence in the home. So next small steps can be very powerful. In the terms of somebody who has gone through a traumatic event, the next small step might be, you know, figuring out how they're going to regulate their sleeping and eating. But it helps them to understand the active role that they play in their coping. And that in turn helps to create that sense of empowerment and overcome, you know, powerlessness and hopelessness. You know, is solution focused work going to help alleviate the core source of trauma, like trauma specific modalities? No. And is it meant to replace trauma specific modalities? Absolutely not. But it can be a wonderful place to start with stabilization. And I believe it is a really powerful tool to complement a lot of other modalities when you're looking at some problems that maybe it's not appropriate for all on its own.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. And I guess sometimes clients, like you said, come in with a lot of problems. And I think just the exercise of honing in on which problems are the most upsetting or the most difficult to deal with is a process on its own.
It is. And you really do have to select one problem to start with.
Okay. Do you go to the worst, or you just allow them to kind of
guide that? Yeah, they got it. You ask the question, you know, if we need to start working on one of these problems, which one is the most important for you? And, you know, surprisingly, it's usually not the problem I would pick as the most important one. But it's the most important to them. And that's key. And that engenders a certain level of buy-in in the therapeutic process that I think is absolutely invaluable.
Nice. No, that makes good sense. Let's kind of talk about how brief solution-focused therapy is impacts the therapist. Because I think when we're doing trauma therapy, we're hearing a lot more about problems, about details, about, you know, upsetting events and memories. There's a real shift with solution-focused therapy where we're not talking about problems. We're actually talking about things they're doing already, steps they can take, you know, really shifting into more positive conversations and planning. I imagine that there's a bit of a less burden on a therapist in some ways doing more solution-focused therapy. I don't know if you can speak to that or not.
So solution-focused work is exhausting in some regards because you have to be so attuned to the client and you are so with them, just like every other modality. But you're right. The beauty of solution-focused work is you live in a space that is about competence, empowerment, and hope. Mm-hmm. When we started and I said, you know, solution-focused work just feels right to my soul. I leave my solution-focused sessions so energized. It's this amazing synergistic dance between me and the client where we start down here, but we go around and around in the spiral, and the energy builds and the empowerment builds and the energy just seems to lift. Even if it's somebody walking in saying, I can't go on, you know, I feel like I need to kill myself. and leaving saying, I can make it through another day. It's so uplifting. And there are some good articles. There's one in particular by Frederick Bannock, Post-Traumatic Success and Solution-Focused Brief Therapy, talking about how solution-focused work can play a really big role in transforming traumatic stress into post-traumatic growth. And I believe that that is a process that is as true for the therapist as it is for the client. We're inhabiting the same space.
Yeah, that's well said. The uplifting part of it. And it feels so good when clients leave with a plan and confidence and I can do this and I'm going to make it. That's rewarding for us as therapists.
And in solution focused work, we never assume that the client feels the need to come back for another session. Sessions end with, would you like to come back to see me again? For some clients, that one conversation is enough. It is enough to get them to a place where they feel able to cope, where they feel functional enough in their life that they don't need to come see us again. From our expert perspective, we might say, oh, well, no, there's so much therapeutic work left to be done, right? But that their reality is the important piece here. If they feel empowered enough, if they feel competent enough, then that is enough.
What if they put that back onto you? And that happens a lot. You know, what do you think? How many more sessions? How often should I come? Is this all just redirected back to them?
That's what I do. I do a lot of redirection. But then I also say, you know, I'm willing to meet with you as many times as you would like. And it's something that we can revisit. It's not a me trying to push them out the door. It's about me trying to position them as an expert.
Right.
Instead of myself.
And I love modalities that are kind of geared at working ourselves out of a job.
Yes. And the beauty of solution-focused work is that it usually is complete relatively quickly. But yeah, this change can be quick. And when I say change, you're not necessarily talking about people's entire lives transforming in the course of 6 to 8 sessions. But I go back to the solution-focused belief that large change comes from small change. And it only takes, you know, maybe 3 or 4 steps of that small change sometimes for clients to say, yeah, I got this. And that's the tipping point for them. So the brief part of the therapy isn't transforming people's lives overnight. It is moving to a sense of competence and empowerment and hopefulness that helps them function in a way that they were not able to function before.
And I think that also kind of goes back to what you're saying about perception is reality. And there's an element of what's our reality as helpers of what healing really is or what successful therapy really is. And I think with solution-focused therapy, the success is defined differently.
It is, and it's rooted in a very, very deep-seated respect for our clients. Our clients are not puzzles. And when you look at the complex issues that some of our clients face, to say that there is one problem and one solution or one path towards healing, I think is, you know, vastly oversimplifying things. And to sit there and tinker and play for an extended period of time may be disrespectful to our clients.
Right. And I guess in some ways it kind of makes me think about trauma therapy and how, you know, we're taught at least in EMDR to go through an attachment and trauma history and kind of pinpoint specific events and memories and experiences throughout their life that may still be impacting them now. And sometimes that can be daunting, especially with complex trauma. Mm-hmm. That that we're sort of taught that we need to be working through to help somebody heal?
Yeah, solution-focused work is very, very different in that regard, that there is no history taking. It's not that it doesn't matter. It's just that it may not matter to the solution. So again, if you're looking to heal trauma and complex trauma, then your, you know, trauma-specific modality is more appropriate. However, yeah, if you're looking at overcoming, if you're looking at working clients maybe who are not good candidates for trauma-specific therapy for a variety of reasons, just because you can't go to that place doesn't mean you can't go to other places that are going to be very beneficial overall.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I don't mean to kind of compare this to trauma therapy. I guess it's my own frame of reference. But I think it, in a way, it says to me, at least in my opinion, that as helpers, we need to be eclectic. We need to have different tools. We need to look at clients as individuals and not have kind of a cookie cutter approach that every client needs trauma therapy or every client needs solution focused therapy. There's a lot of room for complementary and complementing therapies.
You know, my time at Southwest has taught me some very important lessons. And one of those important lessons is to be able to really hear what the client thinks is best for them. And every time I forget that, I'm like, oh, I really feel like I'm spinning my wheels here. Why? Oh, right. I need to go back.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. Being able to have a lot of different tools in the toolbox can only benefit both our clients, but us as clinicians as well. And if the COVID has taught us nothing else, it is that we need to be prepared to be flexible. Yeah. So I think that solution-focused work has a tendency to be dismissed. But if people are willing to take us a minute to just look at some of the techniques and how they might be useful in their practice, they might be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, and I think I'm really, really thankful to you for bringing it back onto my radar. And I think no matter where you work, and I know a lot of listeners work in organizations where they're limited with sessions, it makes sense for everybody to have some training in solution focused therapy, I think, across the board. And as a great way, even of just ending sessions or assessing problems, reframing, empowering clients, it just seems like a no-brainer as you kind of talk about all the benefits of it, that we all have some solution-focused tools to kind of rely on with our clients.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Any, just kind of a question I like to ask everybody, what do you do or how do you manage, prevent, deal with burnout, vicarious trauma?
For me, it's about the word no. Learning to say no. The self-care propaganda is all about, you know, what you're going to do for yourself. You know, the bubble bath, the run. I've had to come to an understanding for me that self-care means, you know, saying no to that late night or to that extra file or to whatever else it is I have to say no to. And it's still a process that I'm perfecting.
Yeah.
But being able to say no and knowing that it's okay, knowing my limits, knowing my boundaries, and being useful to the people I can be useful to rather than trying to, you know, overstretch myself and be not very useful to a larger number of people.
And I think, you know, that involves a lot of self-awareness and maybe putting aside our desire or need to please other people to, you know, look good to your boss or to try and help one more person, and just having limits on that. So I think that's a really, really valuable point.
And I think the rescuer in all of us is strong in this profession.
Mm-hmm.
That we really want to help genuinely. And that drive to help can sometimes get the better of us. even I feel like a pendulum that swings back and forth between, you know, just right and too much. So that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just one of those forces within myself that I need to pay attention to and try and keep in check.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing all that. And you're the biggest solution-focused cheerleader I've ever met, and I love it. And it's great to talk to you.
Thank you for having me so that I could talk about this. It's exciting.
This episode is brought to you by Rebel Office, an online resource center for entrepreneurs, including mentorship, strategy building, and graphic and web design services. To get in touch with Rebel Office about elevating your practice, visit rebeloffice.ca and use the promo code SocialWorkMe to be eligible for over 50% off your first session.